Hi, and welcome to show number 23 of the El Cafecito Travel Talks, a podcast where people share travel stories and adventures. My name is Tony Lloyd, and I'm your host. I'd like to thank all the people who've been supporting the show through your donations, and for the people who would like to do so, please take a look at the podcast notes to see how you can contribute. I'd like to encourage people to subscribe to our show so that you get all the updates as soon as they come in. Take a look at our Facebook page for the written stories. And if you're someone who likes to write, or if you'd like to contribute a story for a future podcast, please send an email to elcafecitotraveltalks@gmail.com. If you have any comments or suggestions for the show, or anything that you'd like to see me do different on this show, please also send an email to elcafecitotraveltalks@gmail.com. Today's show was previously recorded here at the El Cafecito in Cuenca, Ecuador, before the global pandemic. And as people are starting to think about traveling again, we talk about the option of doing it nice and slowly. So please get yourself a cup of tea or a coffee and enjoy the show.
My name is Keith Ferris. I'm from Drogheda, County Laois, Ireland. I've been traveling for about 7 months now.
What made you decide to come on the road? What made you decide to travel? Where did the travel bug get you? At what moment?
I would say, if I had to put a time on it, midway through when I was studying for my master's degree, it was 12 months in total to get, and I'd say after about 6 months of, you know, working, you know, about 6 days a week, 5 days a week doing research or studying, and then 1 or 2 days working in my part-time job, and it kind of just, I mean, I always had it in my head I would like to go away for a little and see more of the world, and definitely working nearly every day of the week for a month, for a year, was there. Yeah, I was like itching to go by the time I came out. South America, I had a cousin who had traveled here before, and you know, he highly recommended it, so I thought, yeah, of course, why not, I'll try.
Okay, and the other people, the other friends and families, what did they have to say about you making this move to come to travel in South America?
My immediate family were quite happy. Happy and sad. They're like, you know, happy to go out and see the world. But obviously, where I'm from, there's a little bit of stigma associated with South America for people who are almost naive to the reality of what it's like to live here. They think, oh, it's very dangerous. You're going here alone. Why are you doing this? Why are you going there?
Very common. But yeah, it's very true. It's a fear that most people have.
Yeah. And that was probably the initial reaction, it's like, oh, why are you going there? But then, I mean, once I got there and I sent them a few pictures, they were put to ease, so no problem at all.
Okay. Theme for today is slow traveling. There's a lot of people who, usually within a month, they might see 2 or 3 countries. However, Keith, you've been in Colombia and Ecuador now over a period of 8 months, right?
Roughly, yeah, seven to eight.
Okay. Explain to us what you've been doing in those 7 to 8 months and why you chose to spend 7 to 8 months to see 2 countries versus 7 to 8 months to see a whole continent.
So in the last 8 months, I mean, I did hurry through Colombia in about a month and a half, and the rest of my time has been spent working mostly volunteering in different parts of Ecuador, a little bit of traveling too, working in hostels, volunteering in El Cafecito in Quito and in Cuenca, and a short stint working in the rainforest in Quibena.
Okay, why do you opt to choose this style of traveling versus packing your bags, and basically you could have gone to Quito for 48 hours like a lot of people do, Cuenca for a day, and then continue on in your travel? Why do you choose this form of travel?
Initially, it was because I wanted to practice and improve my Spanish to a reasonable level where I could get around more comfortably and talk to people a bit more comfortably too. But I like the idea of being able to really get to know a place, to be able to live there for a while, to really get to know the people. And it certainly saves a lot of money if time isn't an issue, if you can spend as much time as you like. then I would definitely recommend it for everybody, for sure. Yeah, saves money, great way to practice Spanish, learn new cultures.
Okay.
Yeah, everything like that.
Let's talk a little bit about how you find the jobs that you do when you're doing slow travel. Like,
first off, the site Workaway.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely set up a profile with that, because yeah, and it's great to see even just the variety of jobs and places where there are jobs and things to do and see. And if you set up a Workaway profile, it's pretty easy. But like, I mean, you could go, I meet people who've just gone, they just go somewhere, and if they like it, they will just ask and talk to people and get to know people and say, I'll be happy to volunteer here, please, if you have room for volunteers. So either way would be pretty easy, or even through people you know, and through friends of friends. I believe that's how I got my job in the rainforest when I was here, through a friend of a friend. And it's funny how it works, but it does work, which is good. Yeah, so just go for it, be outgoing.
Okay, so let's start off our first. Workaway is a website that's mm-hmm. called workaway.info, if anyone is listening and have not heard of it before. And on the website, you'll find out information. Basically, one goes in, one looks at the country or the region they're looking for, and then they have all the different opportunities. You create yourself a profile, which explains, you start off with a picture, which I would recommend the picture be something very clear, no sunglasses, just a clear, decent picture of yourself. Mm. And then you give a little bit about your experience and your background, what do you have to offer. And then you could go through and look through the different profiles that they are for the different places that you might want to volunteer. Keep in mind that the places that you might want to volunteer are also looking on the system, and they're reading through your information, and maybe one of them might contact you asking you to come and work with them based on your experience and your background in that. So definitely, I think it is a site that's worth recommending. We get no kickbacks at all from it, but it's definitely worth recommending.
Yeah, you get the volunteers.
You're absolutely right. It all goes around in different ways. But the other thing, like you just said, I think a lot of people don't realize that it is just very easy to show up in a town or a city or a village in something in an area in which you feel comfortable. Mm. So if it's a small village and that's the area you feel comfortable, and you want to walk up to the school and say to them, look, I'm here, I have this ability, you know, how could I help you? And where do you need help? And you'll be surprised how many people are willing to say right away, yes, we could use your help in this and this way. Mm. Be flexible. Be flexible that you might not live, obviously, you're in a different culture, in a different place, and you might not be having the same living conditions that you have at home.
For sure, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Definitely, and I think that's a key factor if somebody is really with the idea that this is what they want to do. Mm-hmm. And as you said, through friends of friends, I think it's important also.
And get to know people. Yeah.
Exactly.
People, after a while, getting people have often just, would you be interested in going here? Or have a friend who has a friend here or wants to work there. They're looking for people, and, you know, yeah, you end up rejecting offers at places. So, yeah, be outgoing and look, like, seek and you will find.
Okay, very good advice. Another thing that I think a lot of people have difficulties with is when you're in this environment, as you said, talk to people. Mm-hmm. How do you do it? I know it sounds like it, like to yourself, and I know that sometimes when people really are outgoing, they're like, oh, but it's really easy.
Yeah,
but for a lot of people, it's not that easy.
Of course.
Okay, so what could you say to those people?
Yeah, it all starts with like a nice hello, how are you? I don't know, something you can try and discover some common ground you can build upon or some connections. Because typically people that you meet here in hostels, they're relatively similar, you know. They're often taking the decision to travel by themselves. They have their own money, perhaps their own career. And like for me, that's how I feel about myself. So I feel like you can often relate to people quite easy. And people, you know, they're not going to, they'll say hello back, they will say hi, how are you, and then you just, I don't know, ask a few questions, yeah, open up. It just takes a leap of faith. You got to jump in and say hello, and yeah, you'd be surprised, you end up really getting so close to some people that you never thought you would in a million years be excellent friends with. And you might travel off to a place and have a great experience together, and it's incredibly good, it's great for bonding, but yeah, just starts with like a friendly hi, how are you kind of thing.
Do you, at the top of your head, might you have a story that you could share with us about just walking up to someone and saying hello, and then the next thing you know, for your next little few days?
It was maybe 2 weeks in when I had gotten to Santa Marta in northern Colombia. I arrived late, so I didn't really get to meet anyone during the day. So the next morning at breakfast, I sat down on my own, but then an Argentinian girl had sat across from me, and I tried my terrible Spanish. She had no English, but I mean, it was funny because, you know, the challenge of trying to have a conversation, it was funny. And then her friends came along, and just within 15 minutes, we had made like, there was a group of maybe 5 of us, and we all decided, oh, let's all go to the beach together.
Okay.
And we went to the beach for the day, all had a great day together, and then we came back, and I think we spent the next like 4 days all sort of hanging together as a nice good group in the same place. Two or more of the guys, a German guy and a Spanish guy, and the three of us ended up actually traveling then for another 2 weeks together.
Okay.
Yeah, like hitting the road together. They're just cool dudes, we clicked, and yeah, that's how it happened. Just one day at breakfast, and then there you go. Friends for life.
Exactly, and that's exactly how it happens.
Mm.
So let's go back a little bit about some of the travels that you've done, since we are talking about slow travel today. And you mentioned about your experience in the Amazon jungle, or you said it really quickly.
Mm.
Let's talk a little bit about that. Okay, yes. Imagine you're calling up your best friend back home. How did you explain to them what you were doing, and how do you explain
how? I had to do that a few times, and it was kind of hard. They were seeking someone who, you know, was a native English speaker, first of all, and who also understood enough Spanish to be able to work there, and who has a background or is interested in biology.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I match that description quite well.
What was your master's in?
Biological engineering. Like, would be very interesting to me, and, you know, incredible to see, and I would definitely recommend the rainforest for anyone else who shared that interest. Initially, I was just taking me to jungle. I was just learning sort of how these tourist lodges operate, and the manner in which they work, the way you have to deal with people, and then obviously learning about the rainforest itself, and from the geology to the plants and the animals, the many, many plants and animals, and the indigenous cultures that live there, and everything you want to know about the jungle, you kind of needed to learn. And you pick it up surprisingly quick. It's the wildest classroom you'll ever go to.
Okay.
You know, and you learn, if you see an incredible bird, now you really remember it because it's incredibly striking, and it's like a first-hand account, and you remember the name and you learn about it, and it's incredible. Definitely the wildest job I've ever had. I mean, you're cut off from social media, you're cut off from the internet and, you know, mobile phones entirely. You know, so there's no social media, there's no Facebook, there's nothing like that. You can't even get the news.
Uh-huh.
And to get news, there was only one phone in the place that was a direct line with their office in Quito.
Uh-huh.
So unless you asked someone who happened to call from Quito during the day, you didn't discover what happened in the world or what was going on or what happened in football or whatever. And it was definitely liberating not to have, like, it was great to say, not having to worry about Facebook or, you know, you don't get messages, it's just you and, you know, you're out there in the jungle and you're living it. That is fun. I mean, after a month, I was kind of ready to, just to, you know, have a shower with warm water and stuff, like, small stuff you miss. Places full of insects, so, I mean, if you have no problem with that, it's okay, but if that's a big problem for you, I wouldn't recommend you go. You get really used to it. You get really used, accustomed to like insect bites and stuff crawling on you, and being kind of damp all the time. The humidity is incredible there, So your clothes are never fully dry. Mm-hmm. You just, you know, deal with it. I know there's worse things in life.
Okay.
So you get used to it. Yeah.
While you're walking around the jungle, any stories that you'd like to share with us? Something interesting? Or maybe...
Oh, yeah. I mean, not every day. Every day you would see something incredible. Like monkeys jumping through the trees, praying to get... Some of the species get incredibly close. They're very comfortable with humans, so they would come right up to you. If not, you know, almost make a game out of trying to hit you or something. Anacondas swimming through the water.
Like, and did they laugh at, like, the monkeys when they try to hit you? Were they laughing? Like, sometimes they have a sound, like a human sound to them, like human laughter.
That is sounds like a human element, those monkeys. The squirrel monkeys, for sure. They could be in, like, you know, a group of maybe, like, 50. It's, like, deafening noise, and they're everywhere, and the trees are rattling, and it's a great, like, atmosphere to be in. Great experience, but then, like, you know, you might be going to bed and there'll just be a tarantula on your door or like on your window or just in your room, and that's just it.
I won't touch you.
Yeah, you stay away, and it doesn't want to hurt you. Like, we would go in the boat, or there'd be anacondas just sitting in the sun, you know, digesting whatever they had just eaten, and you
another know, human being, maybe.
Typically, no. There are stories, and for sure there are. The old indigenous lady that would work in the lodge too would be telling me stories about, one day a tourist put his leg out of the canoe when he fell asleep, and I came and came off and bit his leg off and stuff. And you hear stuff about jaguars, you know, this place is loaded with different types of jungle cats.
Uh-huh.
They're very rare to see. They're crepuscular, dusk and dawn is when they prefer nighttime. And, you know, incredible camouflage, they don't want to be seen. But there are the odd, like, story of, this guy was attacked by a puma or a jaguar or something.
But in general, I was told that most of the animals will not attack you unless you provoke them.
No. You don't touch, you're just there to observe. You don't touch the nature. You don't, like, try and poke it with a stick to move. You keep your distance and you get to look and see it in real life, in close, in its natural environment. And it's like the most awesome zoo you can ever go to. You can get very close. So certainly the insects, for sure. The giant insects there, and you can get very, very close to them. And yeah, in many cases, you get very, very close to some of the larger snakes and mammals too.
Mm-hmm.
It's very safe. You really have to... You have to be kind of messing to... And when you mess, that's when problems start to happen. But no, it's quite safe, as long as you've a little bit of common sense.
Okay.
A little bit of common sense and you'll be fine.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Okay, and then, so after you had that incredible experience for a month in the jungle, then you came back into the civilization. For somebody who might be listening to us, pondering the idea of doing slow travel, could you give us like two or three words of advice for them?
Just go for it.
Just go for it, okay.
Be yourself, be flexible, like open-minded. Be prepared to maybe step out of your comfort zone a little bit, and you find out that, you know, your comfort zone, the boundary of your comfort zone might be a little bit further than you initially thought. And you might really enjoy yourself, you never know.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what are your next plans? You're here now in Cuenca, Ecuador. And what's next for you on the list?
I'll be going to Máncora, Peru. Small little surfing town on the coast of northern Peru. And from there, I'm going to see how it goes. I'm considering volunteering there for, I guess it'll probably be 3 weeks. Then I intend to just travel down until I get to the southern part of Peru. Other than that, I'm just going to take it easy and see how it goes. I mean, and if I was to find a nice place that I liked, with people I liked, I would happily stay there. And I'll just say, yeah, I can stay here for a little while.
Okay. And I think that's an important thing about slow traveling, is that when you find your place, your niche, you're like, okay, let me stay and absorb a bit of the culture in this area. And I think that's the key thing about what slow traveling is.
Yeah, you really, and it's certainly, it's the people too, as well as the place. Yeah, when you find a place you really, really like, if you have good people with you all the time, it just makes it so easy to stay and spend a lot of time there.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you for taking the time. Thank you for sitting here with us. And
if it helps someone, I'm happy to do it.
Thank you for listening in. Hope you enjoyed today's show. If you'd like to get a hold of Keith, please take a look at our podcast notes for his details. And again, I would like to remind everyone that if you'd like to contribute to our podcast through donations, this information is also in our podcast notes. Take a look at our Facebook page for the written stories. And if you're someone who likes to write or would like to contribute to a future podcast, please send us an email at elcasitatraveltalks@gmail.com. Any comments or suggestions that you have could also be sent to that same email, which is elcafcitotraveltalks@gmail.com. As always, I look forward to seeing you here at the El Cafecito in Cuenca, Ecuador, or in our sister location in Quito. Bye for now, and please take care.